Getting there on time just isn't good enough. Traffic and weather on the 10s with Wills and Snyder in the morning on WTAM 1100, Cleveland's News Radio.
Time check 512, Wills Ways to Save. Everybody, Matt Granite, Channel 3's morning news is in. Watch this at WTAM.com, keyword save. Getting ready for some Black Friday savings, man.
The countdown is on. Great to be with you. Black Friday is right around the corner. Today, my top five Black Friday predictions in the more than decade that I've been finding price drops, hunting them down for. I promise 100% accuracy. Prediction number one, this year the Ultra 4K TVs will drop to the 1080p prices we saw last year. Prediction number two, if you're looking for the iPhone 7 or the iPhone 7 Plus, you'll be able to score it for $0 plus potential gift card giveaways to pair with it. Prediction number three, this will be the year of gaming discount. You're gonna see some massive bundling price drops tied to both the Xbox One and Sony bundles. Prediction number four, on the laptop front, we'll see some big reductions. We're talking actual fully loaded laptops with at least 4 gigabytes of RAM down to $180. Prediction number five, this will be the year of the $39 tablet and nearly disposable pricing on all of Amazon's Echo products. And if you want access to any of the big deals before they drop to the general public, with no lining up, very easy process. Visit our station website, get on my deal list, take a look at all of the early deals that I've hunted down for you. And remember, we're in this together. There is no need to ruin Thanksgiving. I have you covered. Back to you.
That he does, Matt Granite. Great follow on Twitter, too, at Matt Granite. You get sports mornings, 15 and 45 past. Snyder's starting to get soft on me. These Fridays, he's starting to rack up some days off. Mark Munch Bishop is in. Morning, pal.
Great morning, Bill. And I'll tell you, the Cavaliers get you hooked by making a big, big run in the second quarter. Then they come back with a 13-1 run with 90 seconds left. But the bottom line is Houston Rockets triumph. And as it says on WTAM.com, shout out to Scooter for this, Houston, we have a problem. Rockets blast the Cavaliers 117-113. Here's how it ended.
All are on their feet here inside Houston's Toyota Center. Smith finally has handed the ball. He'll lob to LeBron. LeBron's guarded by Ariza. He's at the foul line, backs into the paint, pivots once, twice, puts it up, blocked by Capella. Comes to Green in the corner. He'll launch a long jumper that's no good. Tucker grabs a loose ball and it's over. The Rockets prevail and hang on to win this one by the final of 117-113.
There you have it. John Michael, of course, on News Radio WTAM E1100, along with Jim Jones, who will join us at 8:20. Rebounding was a problem, Bill Wills. They got hammered on the boards, the Cavaliers, 45-26. I understand the small lineup, but boy, without Tristan Thompson, who is out there to give the Cavs some relief on the glass? Is it from the bench? Is it someone a la Greg Monroe, who I'm hearing is not long for the world in Phoenix, of course, with the Bledsoe trade? We'll keep you posted on that. But as I learned from Coach Mike Fratello years ago, the third quarter is what you look at, the first 6 minutes. Well, Houston scored the first 7 points in the third and outscored the Cavaliers by nine. Browns, tall order for a bunch of short guys. We'll find out on Sunday because they travel to Ford Field in Detroit. Bottom line, though, I got to tell you something. A lot of respect for an 0-8 team from those Motor City Kitties.
If you haven't ate in a while, does that mean you're going to stop looking for food? Nah, you're probably looking harder. Who can I get some food from? Let me find somebody got to give me some food. And so that's kind of how it is, you know. They haven't won a game, so I'm pretty sure they're hungry for a win. They're coming out, they're scratching and clawing, trying to get that win.
You got to love that. That is safety Glover Quinn talking about the Browns being a hungry, hungry team. A lot of props for an 0-8 team coming out of Detroit. Matthew Stafford on Monday night, though, Bill, 26-33. You're hearing me correctly. Numbers we can only dream about from the quarterback position. 353 yards, 2 touchdowns, 0 picks. Yeah, Browns defense is going to have to get on that in a hurry. Silver Slugger Awards going out to 2 Indians. J-Ram, of course, Jose Ramirez, and Frankie Lindor, and great high school action this weekend. You've got regional semifinals, games including Euclid in St. Ignatius. That's at Bedford Bearcat Stadium. Menor in St. Edward at Byers Field. And so many more. We'll keep you posted out them throughout the night. And big happenings of John Carroll. Mount Union comes in. London Fletcher. Think about that career, Bill Wills. Mm. They will retire his number. The diminutive man who played his grade school balls at St. Joseph at the time, now VASJ. His number number will be retired at John Carroll on Saturday for the Mount Union game.
All right, and that's sports. Mark Munch Bishop, WTAM 1100. President Trump continues his trip overseas. Big speech.
From this day forward, we will compete on a fair and equal basis. We are not going to let the United States be taken advantage of anymore.
All right, Bill Zimpfer joins us this morning on the trip. Boy, he's been talking about this a lot when he's had a chance, right, Bill?
Yeah, good morning, Bill. The president really using the same outline for this speech in Vietnam that he used seemingly for China, saying that, we're not going to be taken advantage of. A couple of interesting comments, though. The president said that America will make bilateral trade agreements with any, what he calls now, Indo-Pacific partner who abides by fair and trade practices. That, a shot at the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal, which the U.S. is pulling out of. So that would be 11 countries getting together. Also, this comment was interesting to me, and it remains to be seen how it'll be received here in this country. He said the whole world is being lifted by America's economic renewal, as he put it, and a new optimism has swept across the United States ever since his election. I can't wait to hear the response to that.
A few other people might have a different feeling. You know, he, on trade, though, you got to hand it to him. He was like saying to all these other countries, you know, hey, nice job dealing with us in the past. I don't blame you. I blame my predecessor. On some of these deals, right?
Yeah, he wants to straighten these things out. And again, yeah, he placed blame on previous administration, says we got to get this thing figured out. On North Korea, a little bit tougher on North Korea. In this speech, he said the future of that region of the world must not be held hostage by what he called dictators' twisted fantasies of violent conquest and nuclear blackmail. So a little bit tougher talk about North Korea in this meeting. But you know what, Bill? Everybody wants to know, is the president going to meet with Vladimir Putin? The Russians have been saying, yeah, it's going to happen one way or another. Sarah Sanders, who's on the trip, said today there will be no formal meeting, maybe an informal brief encounter. Maybe if they're together at the bar, they might shoot the breeze a little bit.
You know how these conventions are. Sometimes you just run into people. Our Bill Zimpfer on it this morning. Bill, thanks much.
Have a good weekend.
You too, buddy. Fox's Chris Wallace will preview Fox News Sunday and the president's trip. Drama, of course, back in D.C. on taxes. So far, though, overseas for Trump?
Yeah, all of those things are true. The trip is certainly going well. The long-term impact, I don't think we know. In other words, there have been no gaffes. He's presented himself well.
Right.
He's presented the U.S. argument well. But there are really two measures here. One, is he able to get more of a united front and more of an effective united front to try to get North Korea to stop its nuclear and missile programs? No idea whether that's happened. And then the second thing is managing our relationship with China, trade, their military ambitions. And again, nice pictures, and he and President Xi seem to be getting along okay, but whether or not that's going to have any long-term effect on the relationship, we're going to have to wait and see. So I don't think we'll know the benefits or the failure of this trip for some weeks, if not months.
Before he left, a lot of photo ops, he and some of the Republicans on the House side with what their version of tax reform may look like. Any rush to get this thing done?
Oh, absolutely. And the poor showing by Republicans on this last election day this week, especially in Virginia, where not only did they lose the governor's race, but also a ton of seats in the state legislature, is only increasing their sense among Republicans. We got to do something. I mean, we can't go into the 2018 election with control of Congress and the White House and have nothing to show for it. But having said that, you know, it matters what it is that you pass. If there's one thing that people take personally, it's the tax code. And with some of these analyses showing that, yeah, it's pretty good for corporations, but some, not most, but some middle-class people, families, would actually see a tax increase, that's going to be hard to sell. So this thing is going to get changed. It's going to get changed in the House. We're going to be talking to the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, Kevin Brady, about their latest version of it, and then it's going to get changed in the Senate. And my guess is it's going to be like Perils of Pauline. It'll be alive and dead. It'll take longer than anybody thinks. My guess is in the end they'll pass it because they have to pass something, but this is going to be a real soap opera.
Best mention of literature all week. Chris Wallace, Fox News Sunday. We'll watch Sunday morning. Thanks, pal.
Thank you, Bill.
Time for a movie this weekend. News Radio WTAM 1100. This is Bill Wills. Our movie guy is Kevin Carr, fatguys@themovies.com. Got a few new ones opening. Let's start with a movie with a pretty impressive cast, and the trailers have been interesting. Let's see about The Murder on the Orient Express. Kevin, what'd you think?
Well, you're right. It has one of the best casts out there. It's got such a great load of names. Of course, Kenneth Branagh headlines it as Hercule Poirot, who was Agatha Christie's classic detective in her well-known novel. And you've also got everyone from Penelope Cruz to Willem Dafoe to Josh Gad to Johnny Depp to Michelle Pfeiffer. I mean, there are just so many people in this cast of characters on the Orient Express in the 30s as a murder happens when it's stranded on the tracks due to an avalanche in the middle of its run. And, of course, Hercule Poirot has to solve the murder as to who killed one of the passengers. And you know what? I've never read the book. I remember seeing the original production for the Sidney Lumet film back in the 70s, and it's well done. This one is beautifully shot, and it's at times a little bit overly deliberately paced, but it's a neat presentation of the movie. It's got Kenneth Branagh's even hand as a directing, and when it comes to directing, and it's a thinker. It's a kind of movie that you have to sort of wrap your head around, and it works. It certainly does.
I was going to ask you, it's a thinker. Does it move pretty fast, though, Kevin?
It does at times, but there are also times where it does take its time a little bit. It's not exactly a lickety-split movie, but it also doesn't drag. I wouldn't say it drags.
Murder on the Orient Express out this weekend. Daddy's Home 2 is also out. That's got Mark Wahlberg, Mel Gibson, Will Ferrell. Looks like it's just a laugh after laugh after laugh. Kevin Carr, FatGuysTheMovies.com. Tell us about it.
Well, of course, it's the comedy sequel to the big hit from 2 years ago. And of course, the original Daddy's Home, Mark Wahlberg was the real dad, and Will Ferrell was the stepdad, and they were vying for the attention of the kids. Well, in this one, they've made their peace, and they know what's going on. Of course, then their dads show up in the town, played by John Lithgow and Mel Gibson. It's one of these movies that it's a sequel that sometimes is forced to try and give a story to everybody, because, of course, the characters have multiplied a bit since the last film. But it's as much of a sequel as it could be. It feels very much like the original. It has a lot of the same humor as the original. If you thought that one was forced at times, you're probably going to think this one's forced. But if you just want the goofy silliness, that's also there.
Also out this weekend, The Florida Project. This looks interesting. William Dafoe's in this, I know, but it looks like an interesting story set up here, first of all, involving, a kid at Disney World or near Disney?
Near Disneyland, Disney World. Yeah, it takes place in Florida in a long extended stay motel right outside of, right there at Disney. Of course, it's not affiliated with Disney. It's just one of the smaller, cheaper, run-down motels. And it's about these kids and these families that live there, and they're not doing well. A lot of them are struggling to make ends meet. It's directed and written by the guy who did Tangerine, if you remember that movie a couple years ago, shot an iPhone about a trans prostitute. And that was really interesting because it gives a very street-level look at what it's like. And so it kind of looks at people right there at and below the poverty line. It has some neat stuff to it. It has some very genuine characters. Willem Dafoe plays the motel manager who's trying to keep everybody honest, we'll say. But I mean, there's some really fun stuff with the kids that are well, I mean, if they were in the theater with you, they would be annoying, but on the screen, they're very funny. But yeah, it's just sort of this side of life.
Yeah, it's rated R, so don't get us wrong about taking the kids at least.
Yeah. All right.
The Florida Project out this weekend, along with Murder on the Orient Express, Daddy's Home 2. Kevin Carr is at FatGuysTheMovies.com. Check his website out before you get out and check out a flick this weekend for more movie news and reviews. Kevin, thanks much.
All right, thank you.
Coverage of the Browns and Case Western Reserve as well this morning. Terry Pluto, Cleveland Plain Theater, Cleveland.com joined us. Our morning update with Terry brought to you by Universal Windows Direct, Bill Wills, Mike Snyder. You know, Terry Snyder's getting soft, starting to sleep in on these Friday mornings. Mark Munch Bishop's in. You know, you get to that point in your career, you're just banking all your money, and that's pretty much where...
Munch works in the daytime, Munch works at night, and then there's Snyder.
And there's Snyder. He's kind of mail. He's, you know, he's running out of stamps. He's mailing it in.
Gentlemen, hold on.
That's how I feel sometimes.
I've never worked a day in my life. Remember that.
Amen. Graduate Benedictine, 18-year-old.
I once said that, and people said from reading your stories, I can tell.
Let me get through the introduction before I get yelled at. Graduate Benedictine, 8-time Ohio sports writer, the year currently a columnist with the Cleveland Plain Dealer and Cleveland.com, the aforementioned Terry Pluto. Hey, great piece on Case Western Reserve this morning. Look it up, today's Plain Dealer or Cleveland.com. Great recognition of those young men.
No, I really did enjoy that. And also the thing that I liked about doing that is... I needed a break from the, seriously, a break from the Browns and a break from the pro stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like the last, I know I've done like three stories I talked to kind of for my mental health this year. One was on John Hay when the Senate season opened. Another was on Rhodes heading to the championship game with Glenville, and then this one. So unfortunately, we'll see if it breaks. But it seems like every time I do one of those, the team loses. So we'll have to see about what happens with Case Western. But, I mean, Greg Debolek there, the coach, he's 142 at Case. The average player there has either a 1,400 on the SAT or a 32 on the ACT and basically is in the top 10% of the class. I mean, I could have taken like 2 years of my, you know, standardized exams and not get into Case.
Go ahead, Mark. Ask a question.
Well, you know what, Terry? We've talked about this. I'm enjoying the conversation, gentlemen. We've talked about Division III football.
Right.
They truly are playing for the love of the game. They're playing because they want to keep playing football. They realize once school is over, graduate school for many of those players is that the game will end that way. But they really are out to have fun. They're really enjoying the competition. And, Terry, it's interesting, too. Coaches recruiting at that level. A different ball game, isn't it?
Your pool is certainly smaller to pick from. I happened to mention to Greg, the son of a friend of mine, that the first grade, well, what's his grade? So he has a 4.3 in the honor thing, and he got like a 30. He goes, okay, we'll put him down right now. It's almost like I didn't even check to see. He was on a team, you know, on a big school, and we'll go from there because of that. And I also think, too, that so many guys at the Division I level and even Division II are deluding themselves thinking they're going to play in the pros or something. It's silly. And whereas when you're at Case or you're at, like, I think your son went to Denison, right, Munch?
Yes, sir.
You know? Or, you know, you have Worcester or take your pick, even Mount Union. Yeah, there's a couple guys in Mount Union, the pros, but 95% of those guys know that they're probably going to end up coaching in high school or whatever, or John Carroll. It just gives you a better look at the world, and then it makes you treasure the last few years you have playing.
Terry, something else, too, you mentioned to me about the quarterback for Case Western, or Mr. Kuda from Chicago. Unbelievable grades trying to get University of Chicago.
And yeah, right. Said, yeah, 4.0 and a 30 on the ACT. Didn't quite do it. Yeah, this is like Dan Whalen was their best quarterback ever from Willoughby South. And actually, everybody around here knew about him. I mean, Mount Union tried to get him and everywhere else, and he had all the greats. Kuda, nobody liked him. And he ended up, after Chicago turned him down, he just was looking on the Internet, sending out emails to places. He didn't know Case had a football team. He just knew it was a good school. And sent an email to Coach Debolek, and he, of course, immediately saw those numbers and goes, yeah, we could get him right in on that. That's like the bottom. That's the baseline, 4-0 and a 30. And next thing you know, this is a guy that really has led the revival because they're 18-1 over the last 2 years.
Great piece. Cleveland Plain Dealer, Cleveland.com. Look it up. Terry Pluto with a piece on Case Western Reserve. All right, final 30 seconds before the league calls us on time. Detroit with a chance at the playoffs still. How about that, huh?
I know. That doesn't bode well for the Browns, does it?
No.
No.
All right. Well, we spent 20 seconds on them. All right. Terry,
thank you.
Thanks. Have a good trip to Detroit. We'll talk Monday morning.
Yeah, that'll be great. Take care, guys.
See you, buddy. Bye. Best team coverage of the Browns. Terry Pluto, Cleveland Plain Dealer, Cleveland.com.
Time now for our weekly visit with Bernie Kosar. Bernie will come off of the bye, or the Browns come off of the bye this week, but a lot of news last week when we touched on with you about the trade deadline and all of that that did not happen. But now there is news in reality. Josh Gordon is back in the building. After all he's been through, what are your thoughts about Josh returning?
Well, I find it first and foremost, for him as a person and as a fan, just reading the situation and knowing him a little bit and watching how things have materialized for him over the last 4 or 5 years, I'm first just rooting for him. I'd like to see him from just a personal and life standpoint come through all this and come out the other side a better person, healthier, happier than maybe how he went into this. You know, that being said, from a personal standpoint, it's one thing. Sadly, from a business football standpoint, you have to sometimes make harder decisions. That being said, he really hasn't played in multiple years. And going back really 3-4 years, the amount of actual snaps and on-the-field play hasn't been there. So I would caution everybody to kind of temper the expectations, especially given how we've been struggling offensively and him coming towards hopefully coming back in the latter part of the year. There's a tall order to ask for him to come back at that physical peak that he had maybe a few years ago.
It's a great point, Bernie, because you even think 3 years ago when he played, he was struggling. And that's 3 years ago. And he struggled then at that time because he had been away on a suspension. It takes a little while to get that back up to that game speed, doesn't it?
It does take a while to get back up to it. And just from some of the things he's talked about, what he was dealing with and what he was doing and what he was going through, the issues go a little deeper, I think, than most people. And how he's able to handle some of this stuff is going to be the telltale sign. And just like all of us athletes, Father Time tends to grab all of us. And, you know, as multiple years, has he been able to keep that level of athleticism up? Will be something that I'll definitely be looking forward to seeing over the next couple weeks.
Well, he still is only 26, but that's a great point you make. Bernie, also wanted to get your thoughts. He did a very detailed interview with GQ. I guess I'm putting it mildly. He talks in there about that he was high or under the influence of alcohol or some sort of drug before almost every game he ever played in going back to college. Didn't want to get into your thoughts necessarily about that part of it, but the fact that he put all this out there, you've commented in your book, Learning to Scramble, how really you've bared your soul, things that you went through, very personal matters in your life on paper. You've put it out there. Was that therapeutic for you, or is this maybe something that's for him to do that by doing that interview?
Well, I'll tell you, that's a really astute point and question, Mike, you're asking. I found in Learning to Scramble, one of the things that helped me really understand where I'm at in my life and what's happened to me and where I am and where I'd like to be going was really trying to analyze your situation right now. And it definitely was therapeutic for me to put it down on paper, to really look at it in a black and white form like that. And I think the same for Josh. I think he probably went over detailed with it because I think as part of probably him, and I don't want to say I know what he's thinking because I don't, but I really think that's probably something that was important to him to feel good about himself and to kind of purge himself from the past and kind of hopefully setting himself up for the now and for the future.
All right, Bernie, let's get to the now as we get your thoughts this week. The Browns off a bye, go to Detroit to take on the Lions and a very good quarterback in Matthew Stafford. Your thoughts about him and the Browns' chances to pull off an upset this week, Bernie?
Well, beautiful, beautiful transition into the now to one of my my favorite quarterbacks to watch, Matthew Stafford. His ability to sling the football is just unparalleledly beautiful. It's almost like the Dan Marino artistic way of throwing the ball. It's beautiful to watch the way he's playing. From a positive standpoint, they had a win for the first time, I think they were 1-24 at Lambeau Field over the last 25 games. They won this past Monday night, so they were on the road traveling last Monday, short week. we've had the bye week to hopefully put some wrinkles in to for us offensively. But I think it's going to be a tall order this week, given that they're fighting for their playoff lives at 4-4, playing at home. And Matthew Stafford really seems to be coming into his own right now.
Bernie, thanks for your time. Talk to you next week.
Sounds good, man.
News Radio WTAM 1100. This is Bill Wills. Our buddy Mark Bona, Cleveland Plain Dealer, Cleveland.com on the line. Great follow on Twitter, too, at mbona30. Writes about beer and events and some restaurants every now and then, and culture and sports. Hi, Mark.
Hey, how are you, Bill?
Good, buddy. Let's go through a list of things you've been posting, or you can see at cleveland.com on the beer front. A couple of highlights. It is a busy time of the year. The Westlake expansion for Sibling. Tell me about this. This is good news, huh?
It is good news, and it's big news, literally. Sibling Revelry Brewery has only been around for a couple of years, actually less than, and it's really just over a year and a half. They have their footprint right now is about 10,000 square feet over on Clemens Road. This is right off of Interstate 90. They have announced that they will be expanding with another 10,000 feet on site. There's going to be a tenant in their complex that's moving out, so they're moving in. There's several reasons, but really the main reason they're expanding is for a barrel aging program. Now, you and I have talked a lot about barrel aging. It's all the rage and has been for quite some time. There are many breweries here and across the country who are doing it and doing it well. John Neway over at Thirsty Dog, to name one, is really embraced this. This is where you basically age a beer in a specific barrel, often a bourbon barrel. It imparts, often the beer can be higher in alcohol. You get different flavors and notes. It really changes and evolves. You really want one of these in a snifter. So Pete Velez, great brewer over at Sibling Revelry, is really looking forward to this. This is a very big deal. I mean, it's not just a little expansion. They're doubling their size, and they feel they can do it. They've done a lot. They started canning. They've really had a lot more, added a lot more releases. So good for the guys out in Westlake.
Good stuff. Okay, I don't have a Harley yet. Every year it kind of moves up a little bit on my list. And I mention that because we're talking some Harleys, but we're also talking some events. Lake Erie Harley Fest is set for Saturday. Tell me about this.
Yeah, the Lake Erie Harley Red, White, and Brew Fest is a nice little beer fest out in the dealership over on Chester Road in Avon. I found out about this from the guys over at Railroad Brewing. What I like about it is, well, number one, there's not 15 different beer fests that they're competing with. So they really picked, I think, a good time of the year to do this.
Right.
And number two, there's a real geographic bent to this. You're going to find breweries represented there with a very strong west side emphasis, both west side of Cleveland as well as the suburbs and surrounding areas. So you'll get the established ones like Fatheads and the Brew Kettle and a few others, but you're going to get the new ones out there too. Terrestrial in Cleveland, Railroad Brewing right down the road in Avon, Bascule, Franklin, Avon, Working Class in Cleveland. They're all going to be there. So this is kind of fun. People can email me if they need more information at nbona@cleveland.com, but it looks like a good one.
Another minute with Mark Bona, Cleveland Plain Dealer, cleveland.com, talking a little beer. Great Lakes doing the Barrel Age Christmas Ale.
Yeah, they're out with this again. It's coming out this month. They're going to be out with bottles of the Barrel Age Christmas Ale on November 22nd, Wednesday, and then the draft distribution will start Monday, November 27th. This is a big deal, and it's if you like Christmas Ale and you like Barrel Age beers, you'll look forward to this one.
And one other note, speaking of Great Lakes, Blackout Stout is out.
Blackout Stout. Remember the old blackout from 2003? It affected 55 million people. Blackout Stout is out right now. A very, very big Russian Imperial Stout, 9% alcohol. You want this one in a snifter for sure, but it's a good one.
Mark Bona, Cleveland Plain Dealer, Cleveland.com. Follow him on Twitter, mbona30. Watch what he writes at cleveland.com and in the Plain Dealer. Good events and some stuff on beer. Mark, thanks, pal.
Thank you, Bill.
Complete Cavaliers coverage now on News Radio, WTAM 1100. This is Bill Wills. Mark Munch Bishop in for Mike Snyder. We're talking about a 117-113 loss in Houston last night. He helped call it with John Michael. Cavs legend Jim Jones is in your morning Cavaliers update on WTAM 1100, brought to you by Huntington. Want a bank that believes in looking out for its customers? Welcome to Huntington. Good morning, Jim Jones.
Good morning, guys. Good morning,
Mark. Morning, Jim.
Mark Bishop alongside Jim. What happened last night? 117-113 loss.
Well, I thought it was the best game they played all season, in spite of the high score. I just thought that's a hostile place to go into. The Rockets were 8-3. Harden and Gordon are having an outstanding season, and this team had won three straight. So here we are, struggling, still trying to find ourselves. But I thought there were a lot of good things that happened. One of the things I thought that happened, Milwaukee was complaining about the free throws, you know, the disparity in the free throws. Well, the same thing happened in Rocket Land. You know, we beat them as our field goal percentage, field goal attempts, and field goals made. And we were about even on turnovers and points off turnovers, but the difference was the free throw line. I think they were 29 of 36 or 29 of 32. I don't think we got 15 free throws the whole game. As physical as we were, they just didn't go our way.
Jim, you look at the rebounding, and I know rebounding is a lot of heart and a lot of desire, but boy, size mismatch or just the lack of hustle?
I think the thing that killed us was the offensive rebounding, especially down the stretch. P.J. Tucker was magnificent. In the last 3 minutes, he picked up three offensive rebounds, gave them second-chance opportunities. And then Capella, you know, we were so concerned about Harden, rightly so, that when we doubled, Harden was smart enough to give the ball to Capella. Capella was outstanding. His ability to rebound, especially in close spaces on the offensive end, that was the difference. You know, Bill, you know, a lot of times we do talk about possessions, and offensive rebounds are usually possessions you can't count on. We play pretty good defense, but the defense isn't over until you get the rebound. They got those extra possessions down the stretch, and that seemed to be the difference.
You know, you can't score if you don't have the ball. And I've always looked at offensive rebounds in basketball, Jim, like first downs in football. Very, very important. Saw a fire in LeBron James yesterday, too. Especially looked like Trevor Ariza, poking him a bit. And, man, after that, LeBron wanted his soul.
Yeah, I think LeBron, you know, LeBron was up for this game as he is for most games. But this was a special game. It was a nationally televised game. He knew his team hadn't been playing well. And he took the initiative, and that's what we expect out of our best player. If you're going to beat these kind of teams, your best player has to be the best player on the floor, and I thought he was last night. Hey, but what about Richard Jefferson, Munch, Bill?
Yeah.
Not Richard Jefferson, Jeff Green.
Green,
was
yes.
Out of his mind. Oh, was he good.
117-113 loss, but Jonesy says, hey, they played pretty good. Dallas tomorrow night, 8:30, and you'll hear it here on News Radio, WTAM 1100, home of the Cavaliers. Jim, thanks, partner.
You're welcome.
Complete Cavaliers coverage. Jim Jones, Cavaliers legend, member of the 1980 world champion of Los Angeles Lakers. Of course, on the Cavs Network, you'll hear him with John Michael tomorrow night. Complete Cavaliers coverage on News Radio, WTAM 1100.